Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Ethan Elkind. Tonight we'll do a deep dive into the Hunters Point Shipyard cleanup and development, which is considered by some to be one of the biggest cases of environmental fraud ever. The Hunters Point Shipyard is a former naval base consisting of 638 acres in the southeast corner of San Francisco in the Bayview. Because the shipyard handled industrial and radiological material, in 1989 it was deemed a Superfund site, receiving federal funds to clean it up for development. The location of Hunters Point is superb, with bay views, good weather, and vast acreage. It's a developer's dream, particularly given the desperate need for housing right now in the expensive Bay Area real estate market. However, the company that the U.S. Navy hired to do the cleanup, Tetra Tech, appears to have falsified its data on the toxicity of the soil at the shipyard, leaving residents of Parcel A, which is the only area that's already been developed, wondering if it's safe to live there. The Navy and EPA are taking steps to reassure residents, but will these efforts be enough to gain the trust of Bayview residents? Will the Hunters Point Shipyard ever be safe for development? To discuss all this and more, we're joined in the studio by Sheridan Enomoto, community organizer and policy advocate for Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice. Welcome, Sheridan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And we're also joined by Theo Ellington, a resident of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard, a member of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and candidate for San Francisco supervisor representing the Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood. Welcome, Theo.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And by phone, we're pleased to have Lindsay Dillon, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz and author of an upcoming book on the history of the Hunters Point Shipyard. Welcome, Lindsay.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
And in about 20 minutes or so, we will invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. And we'll open those phone lines up at just about 20 minutes past the hour. And that number, just so you have it now, is 1-866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. But you can also email us now at cityvisions@klw.org with any questions. So, Lindsay, I wanted to start with you. Can you walk us through the history of the Hunters Point Shipyard and give us a timeline and explain why it's been so troubled?
Oh, okay. So the shipyard is an EPA Superfund site, which means it's a toxic space. It's also a BRAC site, a Base Realignment Enclosure site on the U.S. Military list. And BRAC military sites are bases that the military has decided it doesn't need anymore, and so it's handing over to cities like San Francisco. So there's a lot of BRAC sites in the Bay Area, including Treasure Island, which is also being redeveloped.
Wondering, Sheridan, if I can go to you, what are some of the various organizations that have been involved in the Hunters Point Shipyard area, and particularly with this recent cleanup controversy?
Sure. Well, as a community organizer or someone who works with the community and advocates with the community, we also work with other organizations in the community, such as the Bayview Hunters Point Bayview Advocates, the Mothers and Bayview Hunters Point Mothers and Fathers Committee, all part of they live in the community as well. They organize and also just working as a community with community. In and out at least once a week, meeting with different folks, and also meeting the residents that live in the shipyard and the new development as well.
And Theo, I know that you live there. Can you explain for listeners who maybe aren't familiar, haven't gone through there or don't know people who are there, what it's like to live
sure.
there?
So the shipyard, just geographically, as it pertains to San Francisco, is sort of the southeastern side of the city. And, you know, living there is, you know, It's sort of calm and serene. I like to use those terms because when you're there, you don't feel like you're in San Francisco. There's a lot of kids. There's a lot of families. There's a bunch of dogs. So folks have really bought into this idea that the shipyard was supposed to be this lovely mixed-use development project.
Mm-hmm. And this is all the new development that you're talking about? Or can you also describe maybe some of the historic neighborhoods that are there as well?
Correct. So, you know, you sort of drive down 3rd Street, and 3rd Street is sort of the spine of District 10 and the spine of the community. And you hook left or right, depending on which way you're coming from, into sort of this industrial area. So there's a post office, there's sort of a newspaper place, there's sort of this feeling that you are in a sort of desolate area. And as soon as you hit the shipyard, you see beautiful waterfront views on the left, and then you see a series of what was public housing to the right. And it's this real sort of juxtaposition between what San Francisco was and the dream of what San Francisco was supposed to be. And a lot of folks like myself, again, bought into that idea of the future of San Francisco. We were visionaries.
So is the idea that it was public housing, maybe what people consider a blighted kind of area, and that this new development would help kind of bring a little more economic vitality? Was that part of the idea?
Correct. I think so. I think initially, again, we saw that this development took advantage of sort of land that was not being utilized and saw this as a perfect opportunity to bring in up to 12,000 new homes to an area that sort of desperately needed a economic jolt.
Mm-hmm. And Sheridan, I know that there's, it's not just the shipyard. There's a lot of other pollution in this area. Can you describe a little bit of what just the industrial facilities are like and just in the surrounding area and what the kind of pollution hazards that local residents there have to deal with?
Sure. Thank you for asking that. I think there's so much attention on the Bayview Hunters Point shipyard that they forget that Bayview is much larger than the shipyard. And it has had a history also of a variety of industry, both on the port side, but also with having power plants that have been shut down since then, because of community advocacy. And then also there's a sewage plant that treats 80% of San Francisco sewage, also located currently in Bayview Hunters Point. So it is definitely Southeast San Francisco for San Francisco is heavy on industrial history and development. And so it already has currently a lot of different challenges with having that history of industry, whether it could be the health make of, you know, it's not unheard of if somebody has asthma in the community or if someone knows of someone who has cancer or may have passed from cancer. It's definitely not an unheard thing to hear of.
So it sounds like what we would call an environmental justice community, and maybe a lot of listeners not familiar with that term. Do you want to go ahead and just let people know what that reference is?
Well, before I get into environmental justice, I just want to acknowledge that there's cumulative health impacts. So with having all of those different types of presence of industry and other kind of pollutants, I guess, that come into the community, it creates an impact on health and it accumulates, right? And then you also have to look up, well, who's living there? Who has historically been placed there? Who had to live there, over time? And who ends up living there? And it's really important to look at the income of the community. What tends to happen in certain communities, like Bayview Hunters Point, with so much industry, it's interesting that it's considered desirable, but it wasn't always considered a desirable place to live, and folks who couldn't afford to live in other parts of San Francisco or weren't allowed to live in other parts of the city live there, and so we find low income. We find historically just large numbers of variety. It's actually, Bayview Hunters Point is a diverse history. I think I really want to point that out. It is predominantly African American statistically, but there are other different groups Italian, Asian have historically lived in Bayview Hunters Point, but it tends to be majority of color. And it's important to say that if you're going to talk about environmental justice, then you have to look at, well, how is it justice? Well, you have to look at the environmental abuses, but also the racism that is also connected to environmentalism. And I think that often gets left out in the racism conversation as well. Mm-hmm. So bringing justice to environmental justice or environmental abuses, that would be one way to define.
And Theo, Sheridan described some of the industrial uses around the area just to sort of set the scene. But as a resident there, is that something that the neighborhood is kind of aware of and the public health concerns? As compared to other neighborhoods around San Francisco, or maybe they don't have the same level of concern?
I think Sheridan hit a couple different good points there. Recognizing that there is such a rich culture among the communities of color that have lived so long in Bayview, Hunters Point, and the surrounding areas. But, you know, the other things, I like to call Bayview sort of this toxic soup. And you're absolutely right that it was not the most desirable place to live for, you know, quite a long time. We've got freeways, heavy trucking industry. We've got, again, the power plant, the PUC wastewater plant. And, oh, by the way, it's also a food desert. So there are these different sort of components that didn't necessarily happen by accident that we're starting to see sort of these social ills reversed in a way. But the one of the things we have to be aware of is who are these benefits for? And what I strive to do and what I advocate for each and every day is to make sure that those economic benefits that we are receiving now are sort of shared throughout the community. So the folks who have suffered in our neighborhood for 40 and 50 years see some of this economic benefit.
And Lindsay, I want to go back to you and really talk about the specific site and issue that was a subject of the show today. So can you explain for listeners exactly what was done at this site that required it to be designated as a Superfund site? What kinds of toxics are we talking about there? And a little bit about what's happened since the cleanup began.
Yeah, I will. And I also want to come back to what Sheridan and Theo were saying, and I think both would agree with me that there's a history of industrialization, and as Theo was saying, there's a rich culture and a rich history of political activism. So since at least the 1960s, people have been struggling for redevelopment, for a healthy environment. With the shipyard for the past two decades, they've been struggling, not just in the past couple years. So I think also acknowledging that rich history of struggle that people have been kind of struggling with the city for a long time. And this development project feels very inevitable. People call it like a bulldozer. But there's alternative imaginaries, there's alternative histories, there's alternative ways of redeveloping a place. It doesn't have to be this massive redevelopment project that benefits, you know, people who can afford million-dollar condominiums. So I just wanted to put that out there. In terms of the shipyard, it's an industrial shipyard. It was actually originally built in the late 19th century, but the Navy took it over around World War II, right before World War II. And it was one of the largest shipyards on the West Coast. So it was mainly involved in industrial shipyard repair, so repairing warships that were involved in World War II and then afterwards. But additionally, there's radioactive waste, both from shipyard repair and also from a laboratory called the Naval Radiological Defense Laboratory that operated there from 1946 to 1969, I think, 67 or 69. And that radiation laboratory came into being after the first set of nuclear weapons tested by the U.S. military in the Pacific Ocean in 1946. And it was a big disaster, and many of those ships were brought back, actually both to Treasure Island, but mainly to Hunter's Point. And people were sort of confronted with this new problem of how do you decontaminate this radioactive warship.
So I'm sorry, just to clarify then, the warships launched the nuclear weapons. I mean, how did they become radioactive and then kind of ended up back in the Bay Area, these sites then?
Yeah, so after the bombs dropped on Japan, the U.S. started like a nuclear weapons testing program in the Marshall Islands in the Pacific Ocean. And so they tested atmospheric weapons up until the 1950s. And the first set of weapons that were tested there in 1946 became this kind of ecological disaster that the Navy and the Army, the military, had no idea how to sort of deal with. And so it had this fleet of nuclear-bombed warships in the Marshall Islands, and it sunk some, and then others it brought back to military bases on the West Coast. So Hunter's Point became the center of the decontamination efforts. And then the laboratory emerged out of that effort and was very intimately involved in nuclear weapons testing. So, you know, in my sort of research, I look at the connections between San Francisco and the Marshall Islands in the production of environmental degradation on Hunter's Point. There's that tight connection between, you know, what the U.S. military was doing in the Marshall Islands. So that laboratory was involved in all kinds of radiological research, including it had a very extensive animal testing program.
And do we know for sure what exactly went on there? I mean, I imagine some of this might be classified, or do you feel like we have a full disclosure as to what went on at the base?
I don't think we have a full disclosure, and some of the materials are classified, but they are at the National Archives in San Bruno, and I've been through many of them, and actually so has the Navy, and those records have informed the Navy's plans, it's supposed to have informed the Navy's plans for cleanup. So we do have some idea of what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And Sheridan, from the sort of community advocate perspective, what's your read on the cleanup part of this history? So we know it was designated a Superfund site, as we mentioned, and then this cleanup's been going on for how long, and what's that process been like?
I actually like what Theo said about, he mentioned kind of a toxic stew. But I think that's a really great way to describe specifically the shipyard being a Superfund site. One of the reasons why the shipyard is a Superfund site is also referring to what Lindsay was describing with the radiological lab. Next to the radiological lab, it actually sits very close to Parcel E, Parcel E2. So when I refer to parcels, the shipyard, when it became under the Superfund and it became divided for the remediation plan to quote-unquote clean up the shipyard, it was divided into parcels. Parcel E, Parcel E2 specifically, was the landfill of the shipyard. So anywhere between radiation contamination, which, because we know there was a lab and there was animal testing, and I understand there was also testing on humans. Let's be clear on that, too. There was also in the 70s, 80s, other industries. The Navy leased the property to other industry. So they closed down the naval base, but they leased it to industry. And so you had other kinds of chemicals and toxins mixing in to the landfill, to the sewer lines, to different parts of the shipyard. So you have what I call a chemical cocktail to the toxic stew, right? And so this is really important to point out, because there are a lot of unknown factors in this kind of testing, right? I still feel like they are, in my opinion, still experimenting with developing on a Superfund site. It is known that in the year 2000, especially with residents who lived in that area, there was an underground fire that burned in that parcel, Parcel E2, Parcel E, for 105 days. Now, the Navy will tell you that it was a brush fire, and that is not correct. But I just want to give you an idea that there really isn't a whole lot of clarity around what is actually going on in the shipyard. So when we have whistleblowers coming forward through Tetra Tech claiming fraud, when you have a...
Tetra Tech, just to remind listeners, yes, is the company that was hired to do the cleanup.
Right, of the shipyard from, I believe, 2004, 2005 to 2012. And yet here we are with finding out that thanks to, you know, community advocacy and the whistleblowers coming forward and saying, hey, listen, there's something not right here. You have that as well as this retesting plan that's been introduced because of this fraud in response to this. And even with, first of all, with the community perspective that I work with, some of the demands and concerns with good reason is really looking at, okay, if you're going to do retesting of the site, as you should, because of the fraud, you need a comprehensive testing plan and independent community oversight. What do I mean by a comprehensive testing plan? So let's take the new development, Parcel A, that is now, since it's been transferred to the city, and the retesting plan is being overseen by the California Department of Public Health. Mm-hmm. They are the lead in the retesting. They are only scanning open spaces in this residential area, and it's only going down 6 inches. And I believe they're only testing gamma ray, which can detect only one type of radiation, but not all types of radiation.
So definitely a lot to talk about on that. But before we get into more details of that, I want to let listeners know that this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the Hunters Point Shipyard and those cleanup efforts and development plans with our guests, Sheridan Enomoto, community organizer and policy advocate for Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice. We're also joined in studio by Theo Ellington, a resident of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard, a member of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and a candidate for San Francisco's supervisor representing the Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood. And we're joined on the phone by Lindsay Dillon, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz and author of an upcoming book on the history of the Hunters Point Shipyard. We now invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Are you a resident of the shipyard or the Bayview? Do you feel optimistic about its cleanup and future development? We invite you to call in. The number to join the conversation is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And we're at cityvisionskalw on Twitter. So I have an email in from a listener who says that there's some history to this parcel that we should know about. It's historically an African-American community. And during World War II, the U.S. Navy recruited a large population of African-Americans to migrate to the Bayview Hunters Point shipyard area and work in the well-paying jobs at the shipyard. So a little bit of historical context there. And we also have an anonymous caller who called in to ask, who is ensuring the accountability of the Navy and what is the recourse to the Navy to fix this problem? So, Theo, maybe I can go to you with, with that particular question. And if you wanted to comment on the history, you're certainly welcome to. But in terms of accountability of the Navy here, what do you tell people?
Yeah, no, I'll get to that in 1 second. I do want to comment real briefly on the history. You know, it's a story of many folks who live here who are my age and sort of much older. My grandfather moved here from the South in order to sort of create a better opportunity for he and his family. And it was jobs like those on the shipyard that allowed folks to save up enough money to buy a house. And at one time, you know, Bayview had the highest level of home ownership amongst African-American folks in San Francisco. And we're sort of seeing that dwindle as the days come forth. Mm-hmm. But to answer your second question, the accountability piece is huge. I mean, that's one of the things that I've been out on the street sort of pushing for. And, you know, one of the sort of basic level things that I think the Navy and really the city needs to do is reinstate the Remediation Advisory Board. That was the sort of public oversight board that the Navy and the folks testing the soil actually had to report to. Right now, there are no public meetings, to my knowledge, that any of these folks cleaning up the shipyard have to regularly report to, and that's a real big issue for me.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, wondering if you could give us a little bit of the timing here. So there was cleanup, and then part of the shipyard was developed. So how did that happen? And then going forward, how was this fraud eventually discovered by the cleanup company?
Yeah, so I do want to touch on that, but I sort of want to go back to pick up a thread that where Theo was talking about Black African American migration to San Francisco. But this is a Bay Area, I mean, it's a California story, it's a West Coast story, it's a Bay Area story too. There were shipyards in Richmond and Marin City and Oakland, and all of these offered well-paying jobs during World War II, and they attracted migrants from across the country and effectively redirecting the great migration from the South that was going to northern industrial cities out to West Coast cities like San Francisco. And then what I'd like to note from an environmental justice perspective, if you look at places like Richmond and Oakland and Hunters Point now, these are where you see environmental justice activism because you see people left with the remains of deindustrialization, the remains of military bases closing down, and all of the toxic waste and the stew and the chemicals that were sort of left in place. So it's going on at Hunters Point. There's a sort of a broader geographical perspective you could take, too, looking at the Bay Area as a whole. And the other thing I would say, just in terms of the history of San Francisco, that let's not forget the displacement that happened, in the 1960s with the redevelopment and the Fillmore. And so it would be, I think, important to situate what's going on now and like sort of the promises, but also the disappointments with the Hunters Point shipyard redevelopment and whether or not there's kind of displacement, economic displacement going on, and how that's kind of wrapped up into the history of race and urban renewal and urban redevelopment in San Francisco more broadly.
Although this the shipyard development isn't actually directly displacing anyone. No one was living there, right? So we're only talking about new development on otherwise industrial land?
It does not directly displace people. It raises land values. And I would say that, I mean, one of the things that I've heard throughout the interviews I've done with people is why is there so much money and attention going to redeveloping the shipyard when people have been arguing for redevelopment in the neighborhood in Bayview Hunters Point for so long. So it's a question, I think, also of priorities. But
isn't that what you're just saying? We kind of don't want to have happen and repeat a Fillmore kind of redevelopment?
Yeah. So, I mean, I can speak to that, but I can also go to what you're saying, what you're asking in terms of the timeline.
Sure. Yeah, no, definitely. We'd love to hear that.
So one of the reasons that the shipyard is broken up into parcels, you'll hear people talk about parcel A and parcel E and parcel E2, is that each parcel has its own timeline to completion, and that means that this large Superfund site, the shipyard, can be transferred over to the city and then there's a development company in a piecemeal fashion, and that means the development company can redevelop at a quicker pace. So it's how can we transfer, the question is how can we transfer the shipyard over to the city and then the development company at a quicker speed? And so that's why we see Parcel A sort of signed off by the EPA and transferred over to the Lennar or Five Point, whatever they call themselves now, and redeveloped. And that's why there are people living on the base at the same time there's radiological decontamination going on, you know, within eyesight. And so that cleanup process began in the early 1990s. I was pointing to a board called the Restoration Advisory Board, the RAB, that was closed down in 2008, I believe. And so for a good 15 years, there was an active citizen advisory board that the Navy was required on a monthly basis to report, progress on the shipyard to the community. And then there was, you know, a certain kind of oversight of what was happening and a public space for people to, like, voice concerns and ask questions.
Mm-hmm. And so that was discontinued, and now there's obviously some concern. And Theo, I mean, what do residents that you talk to say about this? I mean, are they concerned? Is this an issue that, you know, that they're really monitoring and worried about?
Absolutely. I think if I could sum up how residents are feeling in a sentence or two or in a word or two for that matter, folks feel like they're being held hostage. For me personally, I dumped my life savings into a unit in the shipyard, and this was the last affordable area in San Francisco. I've got a kid on the way, and this is the place I thought I was going to be able to raise my family, and we're stuck right now. And I think a lot of the homeowners feel the exact same way, that there is there are very limited options from this point moving forward.
And do you have specific asks besides getting this board together again? I mean, what would you like to see done now that local, state, federal officials could
Sure, yeah. I think, like I mentioned before, there were some sort of basic level things that can provide a little bit more certainty. The Restoration Advisory Board that I mentioned earlier to provide more public accountability is key. I think the second thing is I've lost all confidence in Tetra Tech's ability to work on any project in San Francisco, and they need to be off this project. They need to be off every other project in the Bay Area, for that matter. They also need to repay these tax dollars. I think Nancy Pelosi just gave another $1 million to sort of retest and clean up the shipyard. These are dollars that are coming out of the pockets of folks like us who live and who work in this country. And then just a comprehensive retesting of the entire parcel and independent oversight. I think if you go out there now and you sort of take a look at what they're doing, it seems almost foolish to me. I mean, there's a golf cart and some sort of apparatus on the back, and they're driving around the shipyard. And that is, I'm no scientist and I will never claim to be one, but it just seems like a joke. And the public meetings that they have in the shipyard just seem like a dog and pony show at this point. So the residents deserve more. The folks who have worked so hard for this project deserve more, and I'm ready to stand up and fight them.
And is that a pretty widespread sentiment, what you just voiced?
Absolutely.
Among the residents?
Absolutely.
So this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. We're also on the web at KALW.org. And tonight we're discussing the Hunters Point Shipyard and cleanup efforts with our guest Sheridan Enomoto, community organizer and policy advocate for Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice. We're also joined by Theo Ellington, a resident of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard, member of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and candidate for San Francisco supervisor representing the Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood, and Lindsay Dillon, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz and author of a forthcoming book on the history of the Hunters Point Shipyard. We do invite you to call in with questions or comments. That number is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org or post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. And we're at City Visions KALW on Twitter. So I wanted to let listeners know that we did reach out to the Navy and EPA to join this conversation, and both entities declined. But the EPA did send us a statement, which you can read on our website at kalw.org/cityvisions. But I want to read some, just a summary of it here, some excerpts, and get some of your thoughts. So it says, statement by the EPA, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency remains committed to ensuring that the Bayview Hunters Point community is protected from exposure to radiation, and that the Hunters Point Naval Shipyard site can be used for work, recreational, and residential purposes. The statement goes on to say that the Navy is a lead agency responsible, and EPA is overseeing this effort. And then they say the EPA is investigating the impacts of Navy contractor Tetra Tech and its failure to follow the cleanup work plan at Hunters Point Naval Shipyard. Our focus is on ensuring both that no current workers or residents are exposed to hazardous materials and that future residents and workers are protected. We believe that current procedures and protocols will protect current workers and residents, and their EPA says they're working with the Navy and the state of California to ensure that this process goes forward responsibly. So, Sheridan, what's your reaction to that EPA statement, and specifically what's been going on with Tetra Tech?
Well, first of all, I want to go back to what Theo had mentioned about the scanning plan that's been happening. The scanning plan of just the surface is not adequate. It's not an adequate plan. And I did sort of mention this already about how they're scanning very surface-like. And like you said, Theo said, it's a dog and pony show kind of. It looks like that.
This is still Tetra Tech that's doing this?
No, this is not. This is the California Department of Public Health. However,
and they've stepped in because Tetra Tech was not doing their job. Is
that
correct?
Well, there are also two employees of Tetra Tech that are now in prison. 8 months, though, but they are in prison for their fraudulent practice. But I do want to address something around, even with the current work plan, whether it's the California Department of Public Health or even Tetra Tech. We had a community meeting. A variety of different members of Cross Bayview Hunters Point came to this meeting, and one of the community members literally said, "Trust is at zero." And so how is the California Department of Public Health really undoing the work of Tetra Tech?
When you say trust is at zero, who are they referring to? Are there specific agencies? I mean, obviously Tetra Tech, it sounds like, is part of that. But
correct. Who do they trust? If the Navy contracted someone and they were committing fraud for how many years, and how many taxpayers' dollars have been spent? And here we are, another more money being thrown into the retesting of the shipyard, and yet is it an adequate? I mean, does the community, can they trust who they are hiring when they weren't necessarily part of the process of deciding who they wanted to retest? So community independent oversight is really key here now that we don't have, there isn't a restoration advisory board present. There isn't that accountability happening. And where's the public participation? It's their community. And they have, I believe, a right to decide who they want doing, you know, looking into the testing of their site. The other thing I want to mention is that some of the other concerns that residents have is, why aren't they looking under the buildings? Why aren't they looking in the storage units and other spaces? And why aren't they doing a realistic soil sampling, going deeper? Why is it just scanning? And as if contamination just decided, oh, we're only going to not be, or we're not going to be in open spaces, you know? So there's definitely a huge question mark, even in this response from EPA with, you know, they're trying to do a comprehensive test, but I disagree. I think they could do a lot more.
And Thea, what's your response to EPA's statement here and their role in this?
Yeah, I think they're two sort of terms that are still throwing me for a loop. They're in the letter that the EPA wrote to the Navy when these claims first were brought to light, two things jumped out: widespread manipulation and deliberate falsifications
on the part of Tetra Tech.
And people went to prison for this. So this is not, you know, sort of something that you can just brush under the rug. I'm just flabbergasted by this idea that there is no outrage behind this, or that there is not more outrage behind this. That officials, our city officials, and our our folks here locally, we waited, I believe, 72 days before there was some sort of response. So the residents are watching now, and the folks in the community, just as they were 40 years ago, are still jumping and screaming about this injustice. That would not happen in any other community, in any other city, in any other state.
And is Tetra Tech still involved in this at all?
You know, according to the Department of Public Health, I believe they have said on numerous of occasions that Tetra Tech is no longer on the project. However, Tetra Tech has agreed to pay for any sort of cleaning that needed to happen moving forward, or any sort of retesting.
And is there ongoing fact-finding or lawsuits against Tetra Tech? Like, is more information going to come out about Tetra Tech and the job that they did?
Yeah, I'm assuming so. I think we've, as a city, sort of have a moral obligation, and we owe it to not only the folks who live here now, but the folks who have been fighting for this land for so long. We've got to provide folks with some answers and some certainty that we're not being exposed. And I think the residents unanimously feel like our zip code should no longer be the sole determinant of what our health outcome should be.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, can you just tell listeners just what the fraud that these Tetra Tech employees went to jail over, what that involved and how it was discovered?
Yeah, so my understanding also is that this is an ongoing investigation, but two people were sentenced to 8 months in prison, and it had to do with deliberately switching up clean soil samples for potentially radioactive soil samples. So there was a report by the EPA that said that concluded Tetra Tech falsified up to 97% of its radioactive soil samples since, I think, 2006. But if you don't mind, I just want to respond also to the EPA's comment. And when I hear the word procedure, or we're going to fulfill, you know, remediation to the standard set and so forth, in following this cleanup and redevelopment project for so many years, I've heard so many times this recourse to plans and procedures and standards. In the first case, many of these don't hold up. Like, they might sound good in theory, but there's been so many accidents. There's been dust mitigation plans, and yet there's been dust exposures. So I think we have to also look at the reality of what's actually happening on the ground, not what the plan or the standard is. But the other point in relationship to this this ongoing investigation, if you listen to what people have, what environmental agencies like the EPA or the Navy have been saying, is that we had these procedures in place. And so my question, you know, one of the questions I have is that who are the procedures actually protecting? You know, and are they protective enough? And do they, in fact, have the effect of protecting the agencies themselves in terms of shielding agencies or people from real accountability or real responsibility for what's happening? Mm-hmm. So I'm very skeptical of agencies saying that they're following procedures, because I'm not exactly sure who's being protected by those procedures.
And on the subject of Tetra Tech specifically, we have an email from Anna Marie who asks if we can discuss the status of the lawsuit against Tetra Tech. And Lindsay, it seems like you were knowledgeable about what might be happening there. Do you have any update or what the status of that lawsuit is?
So it's an investigation, as far as I know, from the Department of Justice, and what the public knows is sort of after the fact. So there's been two people who've been sent to prison, but as far as I know, it's an ongoing investigation, and multiple other people have come forward to talk about having themselves deliberately, you know, committed fraud, you know, overseen by their supervisors. And so I think one thing that's been said and that I think should be pointed out here is that this isn't just a case of a couple bad actors. The people who are sentenced or the people who may be sentenced in the future, it's not just about individuals. This is about, you know, a broader workplace culture, mm-hmm. And people making decisions and doing things because it's sanctioned or encouraged or incentivized by the company itself.
So there may be more to come then as we do more
yes.
fact-finding. This yes. is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight we're discussing the Hunters Point Shipyard cleanup with our guests Sheridan Enomoto from Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice, Theo Ellington, resident of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard, a member of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and Lindsay Dillon, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz. We invite you to call in with questions. Number, again, is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org. Post a comment on our website, kalw.org, or on our Facebook page. And you can tweet at us at CityVisionsKALW on Twitter. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Jackie calling in. Jackie, welcome to City Visions.
Yes. Hello, everyone. You know, radioactivity material can last for thousands of years. And it seems to me that development started too early. I mean, there has to be scientific procedures. They needed scientific advisors to give an estimate of how long should it take, what procedures are needed, and the main question, can it be cleaned up? This problem is going to go on and on and on. Everybody will be dead. I'm sorry, but there has been many mistakes in this project.
So, Jackie, thank you for that question. I appreciate you calling in. And Sheridan, do you want to respond to Jackie's point that radiation, this kind of material, lasts for a long time? Did they start this redevelopment too soon?
I think if we are acknowledging the fact that the shipyard is a Superfund site, which means that it is one of the most hazardous sites in the country, and it's not just radiation, it's a chemical mix of other toxins that we need to acknowledge as well. Something that's also not being addressed in this retesting plan of just even Parcel A is that we're not looking at other toxins like lead, like other kinds of chemicals that are equally just as dangerous. And so with the comment that the caller just made about is it being there's a mantra that's happening. That's basically cleanup, not cover up. And it just seems like if we had been honest from the beginning of what we were doing with what we were dealing with and being really having a comprehensive plan from the very beginning, then I don't think we would be in this place. In my opinion, I feel like there's just a constant skimming, scanning, surfacing. But how many more layers are we going to continue to practice this way and covering? It just seems like it's just a dance, like it's covering up layers and layers of something that we really don't know what we're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And Theo, I wanted to give you a chance to respond to Jackie's questions as well
sure.
about the radioactive material and if we shouldn't have allowed redevelopment to have gone forward when we did.
Yeah, I think we want a comprehensive plan, and that's, I think, what the residents who have lived in that neighborhood for years have been fighting for. But I think this is a case of negligence, a case of fraud. Someone from Tetra Tech dropped the ball. again, I mean, those two terms, I keep drawing back to the widespread manipulation and deliberate falsifications. So to me, that's my focus, right? And that is where someone needs to step up and take responsibility. There are just too many unknowns. I think at the heart of this, I think Tetra Tech is to blame.
Mm-hmm. And Lindsay, I wanted to turn to you. And first of all, I want to thank Jackie for that question. But I wanted to turn to you, Lindsay, and ask about the process of the cleanup. Where is this waste, this radioactive material and other toxic material going?
It depends on what kind of waste it is. So if it's radioactive, it does not go to a land, or it should not go to a landfill in the state of California. It goes to a site either in Utah or Idaho. And as far as I know, the site in Utah, which is in Tulare County, is near a Native American reservation. So California doesn't have landfills that are certified to deal with radioactive waste.
Because mm-hmm. there are some accusations that some of the radioactive material is being dumped locally in the Bay Area and in Pittsburgh specifically.
Right. So as part of the cleanup plan, waste should go in the places where it's designated. And if that waste has been inaccurately labeled, if it's potentially radioactive and it's designated as, simply contaminated with, PCBs or lead, then it might go to like a sort of a more typical hazardous waste landfill. And so I think the problem is, the thing I'm worried about is that we really don't know. And so I think, in situations like this, there's this, the promise that the information is out there, that we can get to the bottom of this and find the right data, and based on that data, make the right decisions. But there's so many layers of uncertainty, beginning with uncertainty of what's underground to begin with.
Mm-hmm. So for listeners and residents of the Bay Area who want to know where other toxic sites are, where some of the areas where they're going to be taking some of the material from, the toxic material from Hunters Point area, is there a database online? Is there information that they can access? And if not, which agency ought to be providing that data?
There is a database. I think it's called EPA Scorecard, and I might actually get that wrong, but I should look it up. And technically, all of the contractors should be posting their called transport manifests, so where the trucks are going. So that data should actually be publicly available.
Mm-hmm. And Sheridan, on this question of public disclosure, what would be your ask, or what's your assessment of what's happening now in terms of data disclosure on the public health impacts, and what would you like to see happen?
I would like to see the community's demands be met, and first of all, listened to, and also met. I think there's definitely a lot of frustration happening, both with residents, but also within the Bayview Hunters Point community. I think it's important to recognize that what's been happening in the shipyard affects the Bay, and what happens in the Bay affects the state, and what happens in the state affects the country. So it's really important that when we look at a site like Bayview Hunters Point, with its history and that its designation as a Superfund site, that we take this very seriously, and we need to take the community very seriously. Health is very much a part of environmental justice. And health in many ways is first. And so the safety and health, of course, is first. But we also have to be realistic, and we need to be honest about what we are also dealing with. And the community is asking for a comprehensive test, not just skimming and scanning and a show. They're asking for there's transparency and complete disclosure and community oversight of this process. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there are other concerns and demands, being that it's a shoreline community. Let's talk about what's happening with water or sea level rise potential, or when there's a severe flood due to seismic risk. So there needs to be a lot more just communication and transparency in this process, because trust is zero for all the other reasons that have been mentioned.
And on the subject of accountability, and we've talked a lot about what the federal role is, but Theo, do you feel that local government bears any responsibility for this? And of course, you're running for supervisor. Is this part of what's motivating you to take that step?
Well, yeah, I think we – I mentioned this a little earlier, but this is a moral issue at this point. And I see it from both sides. Like if I'm putting sort of my city hat on, right, these are 12,000 new homes that – the city desperately needs. These are jobs that have been promised to our community for so long. This is the economic vitality, the jolt of economic vitality that we've been waiting for and that we've advocated for. But on the other side, as a resident who lives there today and as a resident who has families, who has family that still lives there, our health and well-being is at risk. And we can't sit back and allow corruption and greed to win this battle. Like, we fought too hard to get this far, and we can't sit back and allow this to sort of be dictated for us, or to us for that matter.
So this is City Visions, local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. We're talking about Hunters Point Shipyard tonight with Sheridan Enomoto, Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice, Theo Ellington from the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and Lindsay Dillon from UC Santa Cruz. The phone lines are open, and you can call in at 866-798-TALK to join the conversation. That's 866-798-8255 with any questions. And, Lindsay, we've talked about the public health concerns here, and Theo mentioned how the area of Bayview, Hunters Point, really kind of a toxic stew given all the industrial development there. Have we seen this manifest itself in terms of the public health status of that area? Do we see higher rates of certain types of illnesses that might give us some proof that there's this connection between the industrial sources there and the residents?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been lots of health studies that have shown that people who have lived in Bayview Hunters Point, especially near the industrial waterfront, suffer all kinds of particularly respiratory illnesses, asthma, but also higher rates of cancer. I think there was a study in 2008 that compared health outcomes in Bayview Hunters Point and like San Francisco's Nob Hill, and found that people in Bayview Hunters Point lived on average 14 years less. So there are all kinds of explanations and reasons for that. But I think that, you know, it's well documented that people living in Hunters Point have higher rates of environmental health illnesses. And it's also hard to find all of the proof that you often want in the numbers or in the studies. So if you take something like cancer, Sheridan was talking about people's lived experiences of family members or their own experiences with cancers and seeing people who have died. And that's evidence enough for them that something's wrong. But if you turn to like a sort of a quantitative, you know, epidemiological study, it's often hard to link cancers to a single point source like the shipyard or the former power plant or something. So the what counts as evidence to whom is also, I think, of a pressing question.
Sure. No, it's an important point. Well, I've just got a few minutes left, but I want to go to Mateo from Oakland. Mateo, welcome to City Visions.
Hi there, guys. I used to live in San Francisco for about 10 years. Hello?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Yes. I lived in San Francisco for 10 years until I had to move out due to rising housing costs. And I'm listening to all this talk about how contaminated the site is and how expensive this has all been to develop 12,000 homes. And I'm wondering why in this entire time, why was this worth it? Why couldn't we have just spent this money and time and effort elsewhere in the city where there are vacant lots and empty buildings and stuff?
So it's an interesting question. Thank you, Mateo, for that. Let me direct that one to Sheridan. Do you want to respond to Mateo's question?
I agree, Mateo. I have said In my thoughts, in my opinion, there are places that are sitting empty, even. And again, this is my opinion when I say that not all land needs to be developed. There are some places that are too risky. You're experimenting with a Superfund site, especially along the shoreline.
Well, you had mentioned, Sheridan, about sea level rise and
yes.
the need to take into that assessment. And we got a comment from a listener, Jamie, who asks, what exactly is going on regarding sea level rise? And is there a future risk of that contamination spreading as the seas rise with climate change?
That's a great question. And yes, the answer to sea level rise in the Bay is not a question of whether if it will happen, when it will happen. Because climate change is happening. It is real. And there are different scenarios. But one of the things that's important to know about the shipyard, I mentioned parcels, Parcel E, Parcel 2, are the landfill of the shipyard. But they sit right against the shoreline. And part of the remediation plan of those particular parcels is to leave those contamination in place. And they're going to cap it, put a lining, make it into a park, and also create only a 3-foot slurry revetment wall, which is not actually it will not sit all the way in bedrock. It is actually going to be sitting in clay mud. Mm-hmm. So is that remediation plan adequate? Well, when it was designed, it was designed without sea level rise or water level rise in mind. So we have to keep these things that it's really important because development is deciding to, it wants to spring all around the Bay. But we are not talking about water or sea level rise enough, and we need to start entering that into the conversation about new development in the Bay.
And
Ethan, do you mind if I jump in about Sheridan's point?
Sure.
I just want to acknowledge for any readers that the San Francisco Bay Conservation and Development Commission, the BCDC, has done reports. There's one called like Rising Tides in the Bay Area, and they consider even closed, you know, brownfield or Superfund sites and landfills along the water to be at risk. So Sheridan's absolutely right. Even with all the protections in place, the shipyard remains like a risk, and sea level rise is a very real threat, and that's recognized by different, you know, agencies in the Bay Area.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Lindsay. And also on the subject, I just want to let people know that we're going to put a list of EPA sites, not necessarily related to sea level rise, but many of them are located there on our website, so check our webpage for that. Theo, I wanted to give you the closing comments here. What do we have to look forward to next in terms of this saga that's happening? What's sort of on deck here?
Sure, yeah. I mean, San Francisco, I think we all know this, and I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but is the richest city in the world. And we find too many times, or far too often, the story has been communities of color have been left to squander. And I think what's next, you're going to see residents organizing. You're going to see community activists organizing. You're going to see folks stand up for this environmental injustice that residents are sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's certainly a story that we're all going to be following, and certainly for those who live down there, we wish you all the best and get the process that you want, and hopefully the outcome that everyone in the Bay Area certainly will benefit from. So that's City Visions for this evening. Our guests tonight were Sheridan Enomoto, community organizer and policy advocate for Green Action for Health and Environmental Justice. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And also Theo Ellington, resident of Parcel A of the Hunters Point Shipyard, member of the San Francisco Human Rights Commission, and a candidate for San Francisco supervisor representing the Bayview Hunters Point neighborhood.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
And also by phone, Lindsay Dillon, assistant professor of sociology at UC Santa Cruz and author of an upcoming book on the history of the Hunters Point Shipyard. So look out for that. Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you.
And thanks to all of you for joining us this evening. For a link to this and other City Vision shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on KALW.org. Our engineer tonight was Debbie Kennedy, and tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb. Join host Joseph Pache next Monday as we delve into why California, an economic blue state powerhouse, has arguably the highest rate of poverty in the country. That's next Monday night at 7 o'clock. This is Ethan Elkind. Thanks so much for listening. Good night, and have a great rest of your week.